by Cynthia McKinney, former congresswoman from Georgia, as she appears in a public forum Tuesday, October 28th at the Marin Academy in San Rafael. I'm Larry Bensky. I'll be in dialogue with Cynthia McKinney Tuesday, October 28th at 7:30 as we discuss the Bush administration's knowledge of the events of 9/11, its actions in Afghanistan and Iraq, and the budget crisis here in the United States. Should he be impeached? We'll be taking questions from you in the audience as well. That's Tuesday, October 28th, 7:30. The Marin Academy New Gym in downtown San Rafael, a benefit for the Marin Peace and Justice Coalition and Marin Students United.
Thank you for listening to KPFA or KPFB in Berkeley or KFCF in Fresno. The time is 2 o'clock. Stay tuned for Visionary Activist Show with Caroline Casey.
Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So, yes, we are in pledge drive. I'm back here on the East Coast, just outside, actually right now, inside Mordor, where, of course, even now we are inching the ring of power into the crack of doom. And as Larry Bensky said, impeachment. Now we go, impeachment, hell, now we want to see those guys frog marched out of the White House. So out in California, it was a strong, deep, splendid trip out there with allies. Always good to be back at the mothership of KPFA, and I gave a fundraising talk for CFLOW, CFLOW.org, wonderful organization, and the talk was good, but a little discombobulated, and then I gave a second talk in Sonoma, better, jolly, good, pretty good, and then I gave a talk at Bioneers, third talk, tied it all together, and actually, it really was, trust me, smoking. And we're offering that talk as a premium this week, today, this moment as well. That's one of our premiums, and trust me, it's one of the better things I've done, and it was really strong, 500 people in a tent, just we're together. Second, I want to announce another premium, but also events upcoming and upcoming guests as well. Next week, we'll be having some people from New College and Richard Heinberg. He is the author of The Party's Over, Oil, War, and the Fate of Industrial Societies. So they are sponsoring a number of events with Mike Rupert, Richard Heinberg, Julian Darley, Wednesday, October 29th at the First Congregational Church of Oakland, 6:30 p.m., October 30th in Sebastopol at the Vets Auditorium, 6:30 p.m., and November 1st, 9 to 6 p.m. at the New College of California. So we welcome those guys, and certainly oil. All stories lead us to all stories. That book also, The Party's Over, Oil, War, and the Fate of Industrial Societies, will also be a premium this week. That's the forces of Mordor just cutting in briefly, but they can't stop us. And the third premium will be from our guest today, whom I will be bringing in very shortly. But many people have asked me to have Derek Jensen on the air, and today we do. And even though it's a premium fun drive, we want to do a really proper deep delving show. So the third premium will be his latest book, which is Strangely Like War, just coming out, about deforestation. And as many people have asked for Derek to be on the air know, biting, incisive, powerful, deep critique that leads us to a deep place of grief, which is a nutrient compost that we need now. So those are three premiums. Let me give out the numbers, and then we'll do the Mythic News, and we'll bring Derek in, and we'll do a proper show, hoping, aspiring that our teammates will call in, even unprompted, and then at the end, we'll pitch. So as you know, the pledge numbers are 1-800-439-5732. That's 1-800-439-5732, or 510-848-5732. So here we go with the Mythic News, briefly. So as we may know, as we all feel, whether we believe or even look at or notice astrology, we remember that the word disaster means disaster against the stars, and the positive corollary is consider, con meaning with, and sider, another word for stars. So when we just pause to delve deeply, when we consider, we're actually lining up. And so as our intimacy has been stripped from us, so has astrology been trivialized and all of that that we all know. But it's actually the first environmental ecological language of the interrelatedness of all things. Just really moments ago, the sun just entered Scorpio. We're in a new season now. And astrology really is a mystery school disguised as whatever we think it is. But the four fixed signs, Scorpio, Aquarius, Taurus, Leo, tell us about what it takes to be healthy participants in the community of creation. And says, well, any healthy community, Aquarius, either of our psyches or of our relations with others, depends on Taurus, a continual touchback with sensual nature. And then we go to Leo. Any healthy community depends on how much does it welcome in the unique creative expression of the individual as opposed to suppressing that. And then we get to where we are now, Scorpio. And says any healthy community, either of our own individual psyches or our larger groupings, depends on how much does it welcome in Scorpio, the hidden, biting, truthful insights that simmer below the surface. So the image for the 0 degrees of Scorpio is a bright blue bus with a dragon painted on it and an investigator peering out of every window. Now, again, it's deep delving investigation. This is the dark of the moon. There'll be a new moon on Saturday. And the moon right now, right behind the sun, so it's dark of moon, again, traditionally when people would gather positive witchy time. The image for the moon right now is a fireplace blazes mysteriously in a deserted farmhouse, biting criticism of society as necessary nutrient, desire to restructure society on sane principles, getting one's bearing in a new social environment. Psychological problems embedded in social conditions, issues of entrapment and freedom. So it is more than perfect, again, that our guest today is Derek Jensen. Many of you know Derek. Again, I've asked for him to be on. He is a deep-delving philosopher, writer, teacher in prisons, activist, ally, keeper of deep-delving exploring for all of us. So welcome, Derek. Derek?
For having me.
Oh, good. Wonderful. I'm glad you're there. And as I mentioned to you, you know, sort of backstage too, that 2 weeks ago we had Ed Tick on working with vets, and he said that the vets from Vietnam, one of whom said for all of them, we have a viciousness in this country and we've been hired to be it by the collective. And we want, you know, how do we heal? And Ed's been calling about, you know, eating our shadow publicly. How do we begin to do that? And, you know, as I read The Culture of Make-Believe, which is the book I have of yours, I go, well, you're sort of devoted to that, aren't you?
Yeah. It's a pretty hard thing, you know, I guess in a lot of ways, you know, sort of my, you know, I've heard it said that for most people, a couple, three questions drive their life, and for most of us, those questions begin pretty early. And for me, I guess one of the fundamental questions I was asking as a child is, my father is extremely violent, and my brother has epilepsy from blows to the head, and he broke my sister's arm, he raped my mother, my sister, and me. And I was asking as a child, if his behavior isn't making him happy, why is he doing it? I couldn't understand that. And really, in many ways, you know, it's transmogrified. I mean, I'm not asking about my father anymore. He's well out of my life. But the question can easily go to the sort of larger scale of, you know, if the destruction of the natural world isn't making us happy, why are we doing it? And, you know, we can take this to whatever level we want. You know, destruction of individual psyches, destruction of, you know, one quarter of all women are raped in their lifetime, another one-fifth of them have to fend off rape attempts, and all the women I know say those figures are really low. I mean, what would cause people to do this? What drives them to do it? And that's, I mean, those are really some of the questions that drive a lot of my life, trying to understand, trying to make, I mean, Judith Herman, who wrote the book, Trauma and Recovery, which is an amazing book about post-traumatic stress disorder. One of the things she talks about in there is the importance of making meaning out of one's trauma, that's one of the ways to provide at least symptomatic relief. And one of the ways that we can view, and this is a bit teleological, but one of the ways we can view a lot of symptoms that people who have been traumatized, when they are then acting out that violence, you can view that as an attempt to retell that trauma story. And how much better it is if you can attempt to make meaning out of it and to speak it verbally instead of enacting it onto other people. Which is of course one of the problems with our culture is that we've attempted, or they've attempted, whoever's attempted to separate soul from body, separate the spiritual from the physical. And so there's this misunderstanding, this belief that, well, here, I'll tell a quick story that I asked Luis Rodriguez several years ago why he wrote Gangues in L.A., La Vida Loca, a wonderful book. He's a former gang member who got out through the Literature Revolution. And I asked him why so many gang kids stand on street corners shooting at mirror images of themselves. You know, if they've got all this anger, you know, why don't they shoot at the capitalists, whatever? And his answer was great, which is, well, part of the answer is, of course, that cops pit them against each other. But another part of the answer was that these kids are shooting at mirror images of themselves because they want to die. And why do they want to die? They want to die because they're teenagers. And as a teenager, you're supposed to want to die. But nobody has told these kids that death can be metaphorical and spiritual.
Yeah.
And so they enact it in the physical world. And that's something that I've become pretty convinced of on a larger scale, is that this everybody knows that this way of life is so wretched and so out of control, and we want it to stop, but we don't understand that this transformation can be spiritual and metaphorical. And so they make 14.5 or 13.5 quadrillion lethal doses of plutonium-239. You know, this death urge gets manifested in the real world when, if there was any sort of intelligence working at all here, they would recognize that by eating this shadow, they would simply become transformed.
Yeah, I think that's crucial. That we one of the things that we say is, you know, whatever, you know, it says create theater or live melodrama. And again, you're talking about it on a deeper level. But absolutely, we live in the only very recent blip of culture where there is no initiation. One of the ways we've been telling a kind of frame story on the show is that one way of many to tell the story of now is the issue of the uninitiated Mars or the uninitiated male. And that all pre-industrial cultures, all indigenous people, would take particular loving attention to initiate teenagers. Mm-hmm. And we don't have that. We have the opposite again. You know, get lost. We hate our jobs. You will too. Rather than we need you. You know, we need you to build Stonehenge and to save the world and to plant trees. We need you. And it's true. In reading your book, you know, I'm reminded also, you know, it's hard to figure out who the culture hates more, but it does certainly hate children. And I like to call it the reality police. And I think other crucial function of what you're doing too is, you know, there's a narcolepsy about just waking up, going, seeing the connections, going, I guess it's really, you know, what a culture would do with its teenagers is also, you know, to take the word cool back to its original derivation. It comes from kula kulu in Yoruba, and it meant completely responsible. It meant somebody who was just on it. Just a cool passage of drumming was just the drummer and the divine. Nothing, no overplaying, nothing extra. A cool guy was somebody who took care of kids and was responsible. You know, and that's what initiation would be. This is what's cool, and we've lost that, you know. And I think that that's also what you're aspiring to do, to get back to that. These broken treaties, and maybe we can dive into broken treaties that make us crazy and make us do crazy, painful things. Broken treaties all over the place, broken treaties with teenagers, broken treaties with animals, broken treaties with creation and
well,
oil.
It's the classic, and we're sold a bill of goods all down the line that, you know, there's supposed to be this technotopia that we're going, you know, Christianity promises this heaven if you're only good enough, and it's like, gosh, who decides who's, you know, who's good? What does good mean? Good means, in this case, having internalized the oppressor. And Christianity provides that particular false contract. Science provides the false contract of a technotopia heaven. And, you know, what's the bill of goods that kids are sold? You know, you go to school, you go through this awful, horrid experience of 12 years sitting and waiting, sitting and praying for it to get over, because afterwards you're supposed to get a great job, but then you sit and pray that gets over until you're 65 and you retire. And it's like, whose life is this? And I think a lot about a line by Red Cloud, who said one of the best things I've ever heard anybody say, which is, talking about the whites, they made as many promises, more than I can remember, and they only kept but one. They promised to take our land, and they did it. And I think about that in terms of the sort of insatiability that comes with abuse. Abusers are insatiable. There is no way that you can be good enough, that you can be perfect enough to stop them from abusing you. And what happens in that process is by trying to become perfect enough, you switch the focus from their outrageous behavior, which is where it should be, onto yourself. And that happens. And so we internalize responsibility. If something happened to you, it's because you, you didn't wash the dishes clean enough. You parked the car in the wrong place, whatever. And it's the same with American Indians. It's the same. You see that with U.S. foreign policy. You see it with the Nazis. I mean, it's a classic device used by those, both by the ones who want to exert this sort of atrocious power, and also those who then perceive themselves as powerless. It's a way that we all participate in this particular game by all pretending that their promises make sense, and that, you know, if we, the so-called powerless, can just, you know, if you just vote right, if you just, be a green consumer, if you just do all this, frankly, trivial stuff, then somehow outcomes will be different. And that actually leads to another thing I think is really, really important, which is one of the reasons that my mother stayed with my father was because there weren't battered women shelters in the 50s and 60s, but another reason was because of the false hope that he would change. And false hopes really bind us to unlivable situations. They blind us to real possibilities. You know, does anybody really think that warehouses are going to stop deforesting because we asked nicely, or that Monsanto will stop Monsantoing because we asked nicely? Or that, you know, Democrats are fundamentally different than Republicans. I mean, those are all these false hopes that once again keep us firmly within the system. Oh, can I go on another little riff here?
Yes, yes, and I'll try and remember. I mean, I'll just scribble. Yes, go.
Okay, and that's that. Robert J. Lifton wrote this amazing book called The Nazi Doctors, and he wanted to know how it is that people who were physicians, who had taken the Hippocratic Oath, could go in and participate in a death camp, or death camps. And what he discovered was that many of the doctors actually did the best they could do for the Jews under their care within the specific confines. Okay, the thing they never did, they would honestly do the best they could so long as they didn't have to question the Auschwitz reality. So within the tools that they were given, which is they might have one aspirin that somebody can lick or whatever, many of them would attempt to actually be kind. But the big thing is they never questioned factory death camps. They never questioned starving them to death. And so what they would end up doing, for example, is if somebody got typhus, it's in the best interest, they said, to then go ahead and kill that person because typhus is a communicable disease. So my point is that so long as you stay within this restrictive mindset, so long as you question the frame, I'm sorry, so long as you don't question the frame that's been given to you by the oppressors, by whomever, by the one who's setting up the situation, then your behavior, you can be as wonderful and nice and groovy as you can be, and you're still going to be committing atrocities and you're still going to be insane because you're not questioning the larger reality.
Yeah, because I think one of the things I've been ruminating about a lot too, also, and that's what the talk at Bioneers was about too, is like, let's go back to roots, to how we got to this extreme cartoon of humorless greed and cruelty, which is so manifest right now. But let's go back to where, you know, we can go back 30 years, we can go back 30,000 years, and I think it's important to do that. What you bring up also, too, I do like the model that on some level we shouldn't take our families personally, that they are research projects given to us at birth saying, what does our culture encourage or discourage men from, you know, to cultivate in 1954 or whatever.
Right.
And that Robert Bly said something years ago that I caught onto. He was talking about the value of myth and initiation and ritual, because he said sometimes And this is the idea of families giving birth to their medicine people and cultures giving birth to their medicine people, and we aspire to be that. But the issue is how to not drown in the poison that we take on.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was saying, in a family, sometimes a child will come along who is the keeper of their father's soul. That would be understood in a mythological context, but without the myth, the father just has a kind of enraged desire to sexually, you know, blah, 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 but there's no myth. And again, that idea of the death and resurrection show, that all rituals and theater are intrinsically shamanistic, but we've lost that. So when we go to any event, personal, family, or collective now, like a rock show, part of us knows that something extraordinary and profound was supposed to happen, but it didn't. And then we go, well, maybe louder, or more violent, or more extreme, because I don't feel what should have happened. You know, again, some indigenous, and I think we want to kind of address that, like by taking it back, that we're being fed toxic mimics.
Yep.
You know, violence is a toxic mimic of union. We're being fed violent mimics of, you know, public spectacle and...
Well, violence is a toxic mimic of violence.
Okay, well, take us there.
Because violence is part of the world. And I think that... I mean, I'm not looking to attempt to eradicate violence. Violence... I mean, I've got, you know, dead flies all over my room hanging in spider webs, and that's simply a part of life, but that violence, I was just putting in a middle step. I totally agree that violence is a toxic mimic of union. I was just putting another step, that violence in the natural world can be a form of union. Now, I've actually experienced that.
Yeah, and actually one thing I wanted to ask you too, Carolyn, because we have so many shared pleasures in simple pleasures in dogland and quandaries. And Carolyn Revensburg, a great ally of both of ours, was saying about how you had an experience with your dogs in the wood in which they caught a rat, and then you said, no, and you sort of saved the rat, and it hobbled off. And then you wondered, maybe that rat had a pact with those dogs. Maybe
I had done a terrible thing. Yeah, I'm sitting there. Actually, it was not just dogs. I had two dogs and three cats sitting next to me, right next to a pond, and this rat comes walking up to us, and then the dog started after it, and I called them back, and the rat jumped into the pond, swam across, and then it was listing hard to starboard as it walked away. I mean, it was in bad shape. And I was thinking that I just stopped an assisted suicide.
Right.
And what a terrible thing, because, you know, the rat had obviously gotten up the nerve. I mean, what sort of rat what is a rat going to do? What is a rat doing if it walks up to a very, you know, a human and two dogs and three cats? And what's the obvious thing that it's attempting to do? And then, of course it ran, because at the last moment, a lot of times our nerves break. But had I not stopped the dogs, it would have still had it. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, well, it's just an interesting conundrum. I mean, I disagree with my dogs about very few things, but one is what smells good, and they think Foxcat is just fantastic. And also the killing, yes, because I remember running up to my dog, you know, shaking woodchuck, going, no, and he's like, no, are you crazy? You know, what do you mean, no, don't eat the woodchuck? But it was something natural in us too. I mean, anyway.
Well, that actually, this is another one of the things I'm really excited about, is that a couple years ago, a tree told me what the fundamental predator-prey relationship is. Because I did a radio show in Spokane, and the guy on the radio said, you know, Indians exploited salmon too. I said, no, they didn't. They ate them. He said, what's the difference? I said, well, they gave respect for the spirit in exchange for the flesh. I knew it was kind of crap when I said it, but...
No. Okay,
well,
anyway, keep going.
But the point is, I knew that that's true, but I knew that's not it. I knew there's something else. So I went off, and I was sitting next to this tree, and I asked the tree the question, so what is the exchange? And the tree gave me the answer so directly, which was, if you consume the flesh of another, you take responsibility for the continuation of that community.
Good.
So yes, I agree that there's that exchange. That's so true. But then it's the bigger thing, and that's true on a moral, spiritual level. And it's also true on a physical level, because if I consume the flesh of salmon and I don't take responsibility for their continuation, you know what? There's not going to be any more salmon.
Right.
And I mean, everybody knows this. Wood ducks know it. I was really nervous because a bunch of wood ducks came to the pond, as they do every spring, and they were eating, I thought, all the tadpoles. It's like, oh, I've got to go out and scare them away or something. I didn't. And they left, and when I mean, they were here for several days. And afterwards, I went out, and there weren't any tadpoles. I was like, stinking wood ducks. But then I waited another probably 2 or 3 days, and the tadpoles came back up. They just came back up from the bottom where they'd been hiding. And I think, and I'm going to use this phrase, but I want to be really clear that I hate it when the timber industry uses it, and I think that the timber industry is a toxic mimic. But I think the real deal that predators do everywhere is just selective harvesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know that you can eat this many tadpoles here, and then you go over there, and you can eat that many tadpoles over there. And if you don't do that, then you end up without any tadpoles, and then you starve, and that's not a good thing.
No, absolutely. And I think that when we're talking about treaties, okay, and mm-hmm. which is, you know, making sane, common cause with all sane, reverent beings, and that's part of my drive also to mm-hmm. replace the word environmentalist with sane, reverent people.
Mm-hmm.
Sane, reverent people have this to say. That Janine Benyus did some great stuff at Bioneers also, too, as she always does, biomimicry, going, you know, how do we go to the council of nature,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a democratic fashion,
mm-hmm.
asking for advice, and because they're older than we are.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that treaty of reverence and respect. One of the points she made is that, you know, the drive of life is to sustain itself and the life of its offspring and its offspring's offspring. And since we won't be here for our grandchildren, then we make sure the environment is there for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's so, you know, the simplest things make us burst into tears. Like, yeah, that's true. And in that sense, the participation in the cyclical. So the bear does not eat, you know, salmon that it's not, does not kill salmon that it's not going to eat, you know. And again, that idea of, I think it's the model that,
or if it does, that's okay too. Because the salmon, I mean, that's the deal, is that the salmon are not a feast just for bears. And it ends up that when there is a rich run of salmon, that the bears, all they'll do is they'll grab them and they'll eat just the most tender bits and then throw the rest aside, which is cool because then the eagles get to take their picking, and then after that the crows get their picking, and then after that the bugs get their picking. And so even when there is this, but the thing is, there's so many salmon in a healthy run, but that's perfectly okay.
Yes, and I think there's a part of us still extant underneath everything that knows, you know, and that when we break a treaty, either mm-hmm. complicitously with other humans or by ourselves, it does make us crazy.
Yes.
And we want to, you know, just act out in some, you know, just to get away from our guilt, you know, in some way, going, oh, this is wrong, that was really wrong. And maybe you said that you were talking with Dina Metzger also about gold and oil.
Oh, right. So, okay, in language older than words, the sort of fundamental thesis for the craziness of the culture is that we have a whole culture suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, where we're so traumatized that we can't form relationships. And then in a culture of make-believe, the fundamental precept was, or the fundamental premise was that when you have a society based on competition, you're going to end up, it's going to lead to hatred and atrocity. And then I'm doing a book now about how to take down civilization, and there the fundamental notion is that if you have a city which requires the importation of resources, then you're going to, A, never be sustainable, and, B, you're going to, your culture will be based on violence, because if you need the resources, you're going to take them if you need them, as opposed to just trade on every sufficiently reliable. Okay, so the point is that when I finish the big book on taking down civilization, I'm going to jump to another track, and I'm going to go a whole different approach, and it's kind of based on, that's going to be a novel, and it's going to be based on Jack Forbes, an American Indian, wrote this great book called Columbus and Other Cannibals. And his fundamental thesis in there is that the dominant culture suffers from a spiritual illness with a physical vector. And so what that means is if I get the flu and then I cough and then you pick up the little aerosols, go in the air and you pick them up, then you may end up with the chills and upset stomach and all that stuff. But if I have the cannibal sickness and I cough, and then you get it, you're going to end up with the cannibal sickness. It's a really, really contagious disease, a spiritual, physical disease. And I love that. And the whole notion, I mean, it's going to be sort of, that's going to be one of the possibilities there. And another direction, I'm going to jump two more directions with this. And one of them is, when I was about 15, I read about rabies, and it just blew me away because you have, you know, this parasite that gets into the creature's, I don't know, brain or pituitary or somewhere, and thyroid, I don't know, and then it causes the skunk to go bite somebody else to pass it on. And I kept thinking when I was 15, who's in charge? And I kept thinking, so what is the skunk thinking as it goes to bite somebody else? Is it thinking, Gandhi, no violence, no violence? Or is it thinking, I hate that guy? Or is it thinking, I have a gift that I need to give? You know, what is he thinking? And so I'm thinking the same thing for us. You know, maybe, because it's so crazy. It is so crazy. I mean, 90%, I mean, the phytoplankton is going. 9% of the phytoplankton is gone in the last, I think, 20 years. When you mess with the phytoplankton, it's all over. 13.5 quadrillion lethal dose of 239. Docs and every month is breast milk. This doesn't make any sense to me. Okay, so my point is, maybe it's those things. Or here's another thought, and this is the sort of last direction I'll go on this little riff, that in language, I talked about, there's one sentence that just intrigued me that I'd read. This Dene man said that uranium gives people radiation sickness because it doesn't want to be picked up.
Yes, yes.
And let's presume that that's not a metaphor, and I don't think it is a metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I pick up a rattlesnake, it's going to bite me.
Right.
If I pick up uranium, it's going to give me radiation sickness. And then I was thinking about gold and oil.
Yes, and actually,
go ahead.
Keep thinking about that, because we're going to take a very short break and come right back on oil, gold, and rabies. Our guest today is Derek Jensen, our great ally, teammate, peer into deep delving. I'm Caroline Casey. Remember, you can keep pledging, even though we're doing an actual show and will be for 10 more minutes before we, you know, then go ask, give us money. But 1-800-439-5732 or 510-848-5732 if you support the kind of discourse that Derek really embodies, and we want to have intelligent public discourse, and we'll be right back. To the Visionary Activation Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, and our guest today is Derek Jensen, and we're talking about broken treaties, oil, gold, rabies, and before I just toss it back to you, Derek, we've got 10 more minutes of actual show, and then we're going to pitch, but people call, see if you don't need to be pitched to call 510-848-5732. But the story I wanted to give back to you, Derek, also too, is you write about the UWA, and I haven't checked in about a year with allies who work with the UWA, but here's the story that I last heard, which is that, you know, Standard Oil was moving in to destroy their lands, and they made an announcement that they would kill themselves if their lands were destroyed for oil drilling. And then it was about a year and a half ago that they said, no, wait, we're going to do 6 months of deep ceremony. And they communed with the oil, and they asked the oil to hide. And Standard Oil did 3 drillings that came up dry, and they packed up and left. So I just wanted to offer that. Also, when we talk about broken treaties, but then how do we heal those treaties? And what a good idea to ask the oil to hide. And the idea that I keep saying, let animism, you know, eclipse humanism.
Right.
You know, the understanding that everything's alive, and again, we can deal with it, that democracy is not just for humans. It's going, I'll give you this, how about this? You know, it's between forces and gods and mm-hmm. oil and Uwa and oil and gold. You were talking about uranium doesn't want to be picked up. A snake doesn't want to be picked up.
So I've been thinking a lot about gold, and maybe, you know, maybe that's how this whole thing started 6,000 years ago or whatever, is that is the first time somebody picked up gold without asking permission. And the gold made him, presumably him, her, whatever, made the person crazy. And, I mean, I don't know. I mean,
maybe not. I mean, we don't know. You know, gold, Egyptian. Maybe there were people who had a reverent relationship to gold.
Right. I'm saying the first one who picked it up without asking permission.
Ah, there you go. Yes.
I think that's the first person. I don't think there's a problem with picking up gold.
Right.
It's just like I don't think there's a problem with cutting down a tree. It's just asking permission, or a problem with eating. It's like, once again, a tree said to me, you know, you're an animal. You consume things. Get over it. And that's, it has to do with entering that reciprocal relationship,
yes.
Knowing that, you know, it's, I mean, that's the big party that goes on this planet, which is, you know, I eat you now and you eat me later. And that's the way the whole thing goes. And we've forgotten about that. I've been thinking about that just in terms of actually, like, pooping. I've been thinking about that a lot, that what we do with our feces, which are in right quantities, just a wonderful gift to the plants and to the bugs and everybody else, that we don't even give that back. You know,
no.
we secret that away. And
and make it poison.
Yeah. I want to say.
Well, and even our bodies. We actually did a great show a million years ago on somebody who's completely devoted to composting, completely, and
mm-hmm.
he loves the bacteria so much. And
mm-hmm.
he said, America's not really quite ready for that. But what I'm really up for, he said, is composting funeral homes.
Of course.
You know, and everybody gets a little baggie for their tomatoes at the end. I like it, but yeah.
I totally agree with that. I mean, that's the central thing is. I would love to, you know, when I die, I want to be eaten by the wild things, because then I get to be wild and I get to stay on this land and I get to move around, and then the salmon get to take me out in the ocean and then they get to come back, or some of them don't come back. You know, I get to travel. You know, that's a good thing.
As long as we wouldn't poison those things that ate us.
Yeah.
That's that issue. Yeah.
I wanted to go back to what you said a moment ago. Oh, about the oil hiding. And that's something else that a lot of, Vine Deloria was the first one who told me this, but I've heard this from other Americans.
Oh, I love Vine.
Too. Yeah, he's great. And, you know, I don't want to base policy on this in terms of, you know, sort of the whole wretched political system, but a lot of American Indian friends have told me that they don't think that species go away when they go extinct. They don't go extinct is what I'm trying to say. That's what I meant to say. They don't go extinct. They go away. They hide. And who can blame them? And that once civilization's gone, once we start to learn, once we remember how to treat the land well, they'll come back.
Well, I so wish that were true that I doubt it.
I don't know. Well, I'm also going to put that in that book. I don't know. And here's something I've experienced with that. Is I live on about 40 acres up here of second growth redwood in Northern California. And before, I live on one end of the property. My mom lives on the other end of the property. And before we moved in, there are these two big clearings that had been cleared back in the 30s when they logged this. And in the time since we've moved in, it's amazing how much those clearings have filled in. When they hadn't filled in, much of them hadn't filled in for decades. And I was walking along and I asked the trees one day, why? What's going on with this? And they said very, very clearly that it was because they didn't want to grow if they knew they were going to be cut. But now they know they're not going to be cut. They don't have to worry about it, so they can go ahead. It's like with the UWA. They were hiding.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And,
yes.
And no reason to hide now, so we're going to come out and say hi.
Well, that's great. And again, it's one of those things that goes, let's work with that premise. You know,
yeah.
Because why not? Yeah.
Oh, and I can just hear a CEO for Weyerhaeuser going, okay, so let's see. What we can do is we can tell the trees that we're not going to cut them, and then when they grow, then we'll cut them, which is the false promises thing again.
Yeah, that's what Luther Burbank did. He talked to the cactus and said, you don't need your thorns. You're safe here. And then he red thornless cactuses, and then he ate them. Thus setting back plant-human relations by several generations. But I mean, trust us. Yeah, that issue of trust, because, yes, violence, we're here eating each other. Yeah, okay. But we do know, again, that from Kropotkin and the anarchists and mm-hmm. natural biologists, that the more we study nature, evolution is symbiosis and mutual aid, which does not exclude violence, but it's still about cooperation.
And I don't see it. That's the rat thing. And I've experienced that, too, when I was raising chickens, that there were times when the chickens, or the ducks, actually, I was thinking of one in specific, and I've written about this, that it would give itself to me. And, I mean, once again, so many Indian stories I've heard about this with, you know, it's time for a ceremony, so some deer walks up. And,
right. Well, Lawrence Vanderpost did write about, you know, being half eaten by a lion, and yep. there was the, you know, no, terrible, horrible, and then at the very last moment, sort of like drowning, he was like, cool.
In the sense of cool that you're using here.
Yeah, in the sense of cool that we're using, the Yoruba sense of cool, going, you know, vast, great, one, you know, the mystery, the being overwhelmed by a larger force, that gets translated into kinky pornography, but actually is a, you know, that's the toxic mimic of something. I mean, and I think that's the idea of also, you know, as social alchemists, we look at everything going, what did this want to be before it got really twisted and kinky?
Well, that's actually, I'm glad you brought that up, too, because that's another thing. It used to really bother me that so often in movies, and it still bothers me, that sex and violence are conflated, because I didn't really see that connection. But killing my own food to eat, suddenly I did see the connection, but it's all inverted, that we have made... or they have made, the culture has made our sex more like its conception of violence instead of making its violence more like the conception of sex. Where what I'm trying to say is that real violence, not the toxic mimic, but the violence of eating is that union that you're talking about. And it should be approached with the same reverence and same joy even, and same both solemnity and joy that sex should be approached. But once again, we've inverted the whole thing, the whole thing's been inverted so that it all becomes depersonalized, both sex and violence. That's another thing, is that the violence has to be, the violence of the natural world is really, really personal. This is, I mean, actually, as we're speaking, I can hear a fly buzzing in a web. I mean, and this particular fly is going to get eaten by this particular spider. It's not mass violence at all. There is no such thing as mass. There's no mass. Actually, there's no mass anything anywhere, because even some large group of bison or whatever is made up of, you know, was made up of, you know, millions of individuals, each with lives as
yes.
precious to them as.
Gurdjieff had a joke on the human race, actually, in which he said that the Earth has very specific kind of energetic requirements, and when we eliminate a whole species like bison, then the Earth makes like 12 people equal one bison. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like, you know, a whole football team is actually equals one bison vibration. Right. And so we have the less than people version. Anyway, that was his, sardonic joke. But yes. And, well, oh, phooey, we're going to have to pitch soon, but maybe people are calling up and being responsible anyway. I'm gonna wait till the authorities break in on us, Derek.
Okay.
And let's just say that if you call, we can keep talking, and Derek can keep talking, 1-800-439-5732 or 510-848-5732. If you light up the board, we can keep going, because I want to ask Derek many, many things, and I guess we'll really think of this as part one, but the broken treaties. A friend who was listening to the Ed Tick Show, we had a profound caller who called up about her dad dying in Vietnam and her going back there and healing. And Ed Tick takes people back to meet with survivors of My Lai, who's... we need to pitch. Well, let me just finish this one sentence. Okay. And because I think it's a lot about what Derek's gift to us is, too. And a friend listening about the healing between My Lai survivors and vets said that she found herself with deep grief, and that we need this grief and this level of remorse, because grief and remorse are about clarity. And, well, we do honor you, Derek, as one of the clearest and most lucid.
Thank you.
Writers and expressors and teachers and so organized, my God, you've got books planned in perpetuity. That, I'll touch you for luck. But so you can hang on, and here come our great imperator, Jim Bennett, who is the shadow world governor for the benefit of all creation, who's going to help us pitch.
I don't know.
Are you there,
that,
Jim?
I don't know if that is me or not that you were speaking up, but I will.
It is.
I will try to rise to the occasion of being your witness this afternoon, and also to the listeners who are listening right now that we are asking your support from. Or the support from you as listeners, we are asking for something like that. Do you think I can put sentences together today,
He's
Caroline? The answer is
challenged.
No.
Apparently not, but we're going to get there now. And also, let me just be Libra and hostess. Derek, you can hang with us, or you can go off back to your solo brooding as you feel free.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, whatever
well,
you want to do.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much. Infinite thanks. Okay, I think he's gone back to write several books this afternoon. And may it be so with all of us. So, oh, great team, oh, Sally and oh, Jim, back from the Bunny Planet, a very different place from where we've just been. But let's talk about what our callers can get. No, what our listeners can get premium-wise.
Well, okay. Oh, take it away,
yes.
Jim. Here.
No, Sally. Here,
all right, look, I'll do it. Okay, I'll do it, and you fill in the prices.
Okay.
Number one, you can get one of my Caroline's best talks ever, which was the Bioneers talk just now, whenever it was, last Friday. That's a premium for how much?
That is $75.
And it's two CDs, actually, because that girl can talk, that Caroline Pacey.
I talk fast, too. So you can slow it down, and that makes it
four CDs. That's right. You can listen to it time and time again. Two CD set. $75.
Number two, yes. Great guest, Derek Jensen, his latest book that nobody's seen, and you can see it first, Strangely Like War, about deforestation and then deforestation and everything else in the world. And our great community can have that for
$60.
How much?
$60, and that's just brand new. I mean, just out right this month. Strangely Like War, The Global Assault on Forests, with a great preface by Vandana Shiva also.
Ah, ooh. Yeah. Strong. One of the most, again, two lucid, incredibly lucid, clear minds. And then again, we're pitching because we want to have smart public discourse and activism that comes from that. And that's what we're all here. So the third premium is Richard Heinberg's book, The Party's Over, Oil War and the Fate of Industrial Societies. He'll be our guest next week. And that is for how much, Dean?
That's a big question mark, folks, because
we'll have to get back to you on that because we don't have that information here. So
we don't.
But, you can just make it. What? Oh, $60.
Well, we'll find out because we need to check in with the wise and all-powerful Oz who is in the next room to make sure that that's okay.
That's code for Gary.
Yeah. But we'll do that. Right. We'll get back in a few minutes about that. But right now we are hoping that some of you will come to us at this particular point and say, yes, we want to subscribe. We want to keep KPFA on the air during your fall fund drive. We realize that KPFA is behind, but it needs to stay on the air. And we need to be able to have the money that is so necessary, not only to do broadcasts like this one where we interconnect Caroline, who was just here in the Bay Area last week, from across the country to all of you, and we need to be able to actually pay for the replacement of one of our oldest transmitters, which we'll be doing in just a short period of time, thanks to your support so far.
And the ceremony for the old transmitter, too. You have to pay for that.
Well, we were hoping that you would do that for free, Caroline, and we could either do it long distance
free?
Or we could hook you up to that transmitter and do a whole new form of... broadcasting.
There we go. Or just give it to me. Okay, that's good. All right, team.
But you are the transmitter.
I don't know how we're
doing. Well, we have a few more open lines, so we
will. No! Call 1-800-439-5732. That's 1-800-439-5732 or 510-848-5732. No, don't let the lines be unlit. I'm out here in Washington, D.C. Oh, no. Light the lines up. Please, team, if you want us to, if you want to keep the nation alive, if you want to keep the KPFA on the air, which is the best station in America. I mean, that's just a fact. That's just a fact. And we need it now more than ever, as we all know, heading into this crucial time period. Well, we're in it, but also 2004. I think this is Pacifica's reason. You know, it's been practicing, training all these years for now. And KPFA certainly is the great mothership that is wonderful to visit. So light the lines up, please, team. I bow down, scrape and hovel and throw ashes on my head. Please call for KPFA, 1-800-439-5732.
Caroline, we must interject for a moment and say that behind door number three, it's still closed because we are not, we haven't quite worked out the particulars about being able to offer that second book. So at this particular point, we'll try to work on that, and maybe if people call tomorrow during the next day of our fund drive, we'll be able to offer that. But until that time happens, we are still in the process. And so what we've got to offer is the book Strangely Like War for a $60 pledge, and certainly Caroline at the Bioneers Conference last weekend. The book for $60, the two CD set with Caroline at Bioneers for a $75 pledge. You can work out a deal immediately to get both the book and the CD. We're encouraging you to do that right now as we ask you if you have not pledged during the KPFA Fund Drive. And Caroline Casey is one of the programs that you look forward to each and every week. We're asking you to think about subscribing to KPFA basically for $5 a month over the course of a year and getting this wonderful book, Strangely Like War, The Global Assault on Forests from Derek Jensen.
It's going to be wonderful and terrible.
Yes.
Yeah,
Wonderfully terrible. Terribly wonderful. $60 pledge to KPFA, $5 a month over the course of a year. Or the Caroline Casey at the Bioneers. Wonderfully, terribly, wonderfully, Caroline.
And recent.
And recently, Caroline.
And recent. Extremely recent.
For a $75 pledge, which I think amounts to just $6.25 a month over the course of a year. And right now, we have a couple of open lines. This is great, Caroline. I hope that you're seeing the faint, warm glow that is emanating from the city of Berkeley, way, way across the country from where you are right now. The little warm red glow. The fireside chat that you're having with our listeners here in Northern and Central California. 1-800-439-5732, 848-5732. Whatever you can give is great, because right now, if you can actually consider the idea of participating in a form of media democracy that has never happened in this country and never happened in this particular way in Pacifica, you can, if you give us $25 or more and pay your pledge by October 31st, then you can vote in the upcoming KPFA local board elections. Or you could also run for that local board, and this is happening actually across the country at all the Pacifica stations, which will, in fact, make Pacifica more accountable to its members, its listeners, than ever before. And this is really exciting news and amazing that we can do this, and we can do this together, folks. And it only takes $25 to do that, if you can afford that. And whatever you can afford, whether it's $10 or $15 or $25 or $60 or $75, it all means much to us. We have two open lines, 1-800-439-5732, 848-5732. I know that Caroline is glowing in her own way, seeing the glow that we are glowing, the little glowworms out here that we are. 1-800-439-5732. Sorry for that.
Also, we're just crazy about challenges. Just crazy about challenges as embodiments of mutual aid and symbiosis. And if anybody wants to come up with one, that's just always very exciting.
Oh, I'm really stuck.
So how are we doing?
Well, we've got three open lines.
Can we thank anybody? Three open lines.
Yeah, let me thank some people, but let me go grab some pledge forms that are hot off the presses for who thank.
We'll ramble on.
All right.
Okay, team, let's light up everything. I'm way off in Mordor, can't see the lights. KPFA is the most crucial station in America, as far as any of us know. Please call 1-800-439-5732. Or 510-848-5732. I've been listening to different people pitching, you know, there's different team members too, and I can't do it like them. Going, call 510-848-5732. Call 510-848-5732. It's hard to do that. But we did want to give you, again, Derek Jensen, an actual public discourse, because we want to have, there's things that our council must come together. And I think one of the great things about this show also too is that at one of the talks, somebody came up and said, I work in San Quentin, and there's tons of people in San Quentin who listen. There are people who can't right now call up and pledge, because they're temporarily in San Quentin. So call on behalf of them. There's also many people that I run into in California who are temporarily homeless on the streets, and they listen to this show. It is a great honor. Where else am I going to go, you know, at a main marketplace and go, the market I'm really after is the incarcerated and the homeless, because it is a treasured part of our whole team, and KPFA is one, the only station I know who really deeply honors that. So call for those who can't call also, too, 1-800-439-5732. And the rich, rich, incredibly complex community that we convene this hour every week, and that people say, people told me that they secretly tape at work, and they at hospitals and emergency rooms, they tape the show and even go back to turn over the tape. So this is a crucial, you know, way of us meeting that allows us to all stay in touch even when we're not listening on the air.
Caroline, so, another thing that I like to encourage people to do is when they subscribe to KPFA is if we're offering a book or a CD or a video or whatever, is to think or consider about sending the book or the CD to a friend across the country who doesn't have a KPFA or donating it to a school or a library, because it really is about access to the information. Access to the voices that we don't deny on KPFA, and we don't deny them because of the listeners, and the strength of our listeners here at KPFA is profound. And think of the profound voices that you have heard on KPFA for close to 55 years, and know that those voices are there because our listeners support actually having those voices and hearing them, actually probably only on KPFA, just about, for many, many of those great voices that you have heard on KPFA over the course of many years, the voices of dissent, the voices of music and culture, of knowledge, of truth, of wisdom, and the list goes on and on and on, the voices of everything that are denied you right and left in the mainstream media. 1-800-439-5732. We have some people quickly to thank, but we're getting out of time. 1-800-439-5732. And just because Sally is about to thank people doesn't mean that we don't want to thank you, so please keep calling.
Okay, we've got Elizabeth Strand from San Francisco. Mille grazie. I'll try and use a different language for every thank you. No, that's not possible. Okay.
No. You say the name and I'll go yay.
Okay. Janet Camilla from Santa Cruz.
Yay.
Yo.
Chad Harris from San Francisco. I'm not.
Yay.
All right. Janelle Larson from Oakland. Arigato. Nancy.
Yay. Oh, good. That's good.
Nancy Petrin from Muir Beach. And how lucky is she to live in Muir Beach? And thank you for pledging. Sorry, I squelched your yay. Okay. Sylvia Hanley from Vallejo.
Hanley. Mwah, mwah, mwah.
There
great spirit ally. Mwah.
Ooh,
mwah.
Very, very nice. Lisa.
I love her.
Keller. Lisa Keller. Caroline loves you too. And you're in Arcata.
Yes, yes.
Okay, let's
and
see.
And yay, Arcata. Arcata with the most beautiful money, local currency. Yay, Arcata. Go.
We have 3 minutes to go, so I'm going to interrupt the thank yous to say that the thank yous must continue. The thank yous must not stop here. So please keep calling and keep supporting KPFA and making it possible for us to do this show and the shows that can be on 365 days a year, 24 hours a day. This really is dependent on you. We are so grateful for the privilege that you give us to broadcast. 1-800-439-5732.
Okay, here's a beautiful name. Sasha Schiabl from Forest Hill. Danke. Oh, he wants me to hurry. Mark Ribbon Sebastopol. Okay, you guys don't get your own little perfect.
Thank you.
Valerie McKinney, San Francisco. Claudia France from Napa. And Miko Sloper from Berkeley. Thank you, one and all. And yes, we see those lines lighting up.
We have the best names.
And we still have time. We still have time for more people to join in. Yay!
1-800-439-5732.
848-5732.
Call us.
Yes.
We are glowworms, apparently, and we need you to glow along with us and give
more
us whatever
names,
you can.
More names.
And, of course, you can ask for Caroline Casey at the Bioneers Conference from last weekend, a 2-CD set for a $75 pledge, and Derek Jensen's book, Strangely Like War, The Global Assault on Forests, that for a $60 pledge.
They'd go good together, too.
I think so.
They would go. They'd be a good companion piece, and because Derek smokes when he writes. It's like sizzle. And I don't always feel good after a talk going, oh, it could have been better. But after this talk, I have to say, that was good. It was smoking. It was great. It was 600 people in a tent. Just blah, 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 blah. It was our team. Woof.
Well, he's a great guest, and I like the parting of the veil that he does. It's not pretty often. It's not always easy to hear what these great guests have to tell us. It can be sort of sad and upsetting, but he's searing in what he sees, and it's good for us to learn about this. And, we have some open lines and 1 minute left. So
oh,
call.
Oh, no, come on, team.
My lovely assistant, Jim Bennett, will give out the numbers.
I think I'm prepared for that.
Jim.
1-800-439-5732. Like 848-5732. I have never been compared to Liberace before, but I will take that as, I love that. 1-800-439-5732. The candelabra is behind me at this particular point, and we're looking for that glow that you listeners can give us by your calls of whatever denomination donation you can come up with. We're happy. 1-800-439-5732. We have about 30 seconds before Free Speech Radio News here on KPFA or KPFB Berkeley or KFCF Fresno. Thank you so much, Caroline, and all you listeners.
Light us up, team.
848-5732 as we go out. We are once again proud to be here, and Caroline Casey will see us next week. We